This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks for subscribing and to downloading and listening to this episode of the Magic Word Podcast. We welcome you, and also to any new listeners, and also to new subscribers to the pod letter. And I want to bring that up because we are rapidly approaching number 1,000 subscribers to the pod letter. We are only about two or three short, and we will be reaching that 1,000 mark with perhaps your subscription. If you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a little pop up that should come on the screen that says subscribe to the pod letter, or you can follow some other links that are in the tabs to the side. Anyhow, I know you're going to enjoy the pod letter from week to week, where we tell you who is coming on this week, who's coming up next week, and also some suggestions from the archives. It's very brief, to the point, and only comes into your mailbox once a week, and I think you'll enjoy it. And you will, obviously, because we've had nearly 1,000 people who have already subscribed, and you could be the 1,000th person. In fact, if you are, I think I will. I will mention your name in next week's episode, because I'm thinking between now and then, I think we'll cross that threshold. Hey, listen, we're going to move on because we've got a great guest who is here waiting in the wings right now. And he is also been featured on the YouTube video, which I told you before. We are kind of complementing our audio portion of the podcast with the video portion. And we had recorded that, and it's posted also on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/TexasMagician, all lowercase and no space or underlines or anything. And you can find it there, among other things. And I suggest there again, well, since you're subscribing to the pod letter, why not subscribe to my YouTube channel as well at Texas Magician? That way you can find out many of the things that are coming up on a regular basis we've got just barraging the airwaves with right now. So this week we are going to welcome Doc Eason from Colorado, living up in Basalt near Snowmass. And he has, of course, been the, what shall I say? He is just the pinnacle of bar magicians, in my opinion. There are many who are out there who are phenomenal, and I don't want to get started naming names because I'm going to leave out somebody I know, and I don't want to do that. But he, of course, is has won the Bar Magician of the Year from the Academy of Magical Arts at the Magic Castle. He also has been has a great lecturer and has toured around the world lecturing and selling many of his unique and creative products and things that have been honed over thousands of performances. Well, this week, Doc is going to be talking about his time at the Tower Bar and Magic Bar and restaurant there in Snowmass, as well as talking about some lecture tours and kind of some other things he's working on then right now. And it kind of goes on a little bit of an emotional roller coaster from the beginning to the end of this episode. And I don't want to take away anything. I want you to enjoy it as it unfolds, as I enjoyed our conversation. I hope you will too. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Doc Eason, here on The Magic Word. Today I've got with me someone who is a longtime friend, someone who I haven't had a chance to get together with for a while, and I thought that we'd try to reconnect, and I called him the other day and said, hey, let's get together, and he said, you bet, and it's somebody that you guys have known for a long time. You know him, you've seen him, you loved him, and of course that he was a towering figure, pun intended, in the Colorado magic scene at the Tower Bar and Grill of John Denver's from way back when, and we'll talk a little bit about that then as well. And of course, he was such a multi-winner of the Bar Magician of the Year award, the Magic Castle, that they finally just retired it and said, okay, there's no one, it's just going to be you. And so please welcome my very good friend, one of my best friends, Mr. Doc Eason.
Thanks for the intro, but just to correct it, make sure that nobody gets their pennies in twist. They only gave it out 2 years.
2 years. Okay, that was enough, huh?
Whit Hayden was the second guy, Pop, and it was then they realized that in terms of bar magic, there's about five guys, you know, that we can name off the top of our head, and yeah. So we would just be giving the award around this small circle of friends, and so it was their decision, not mine, but I sort of enjoy the distinction of having winning Bar Magician of the Year for the first time it was that it was ever offered. So anyway, I just want to make sure that if Pop Hayden is listening here, he knows that I'm setting the record straight here.
There's Pop. Anyway. I know that Mike Pichotta is great, and a few other guys who have who are bar magicians. You're right. There really is just a handful of guys who I think have been bar magicians.
Yeah,
in the traditional sense.
Yeah, in the traditional sense. And, you know, Bill Malone, of course, for sure. Be that as it may, that's all the awards are nice. I'm still not sure how to what to do with them. You know, I've been awarded the thing by my peers, and that was good. And it wasn't a campaign thing. It wasn't a competition thing. It was just, they did. So anyway, be that as it may, it's there in the trophy. Along with the two,
but you've been doing that at the Magic Castle there at the W.C. Fields Bar for a number of years, ever since they probably first opened that bar.
In fact, Eric Mead and I were booked into the close-up room, and I don't remember the year on this thing. I'd have to look it up. so we were working the close-up room, and about midway through the week, the plan was, it wasn't a surprise to us, but the plan was that they had to redo all the seats in the close-up gallery. Mm-hmm. And so that was going to be a couple of days, you know. And so is there any way we could put you maybe perhaps in the bar to see if that would work out while we, do the construction work? And of course, it was gangbusters, even though the bar was not retrofitted to the extent that it is now. Mm-hmm. But 2 days after, the project got started, we went 2 days. And then on the third day, they said, okay, the close-up gallery is all set for you to go back into. And we both said, hey, could we just stay in the bar? Because it's a lot more fun. And so I was, again, Pop Hayden had some input on that whole thing. But and then they eventually reworked the whole thing so that the sinks were gone and you could actually get right up to the bar, and they had a platform. We had suddenly we got a PA system that we could work with, and it continues to be one of my favorite venues in the world to work. It's the Magic Castle, and for some reason it's no longer the W.C. Fields Bar. There's reasons for that, I'm sure, we could go into, but I'd rather not. And it's now called the Library Bar.
Okay. They want you to be quiet, I guess, there, right?
That didn't work. That's what they were saying. That didn't work. Because we whip and shout on it. And that room is, for those of you who've been to the castle before, you know that the shows go off, pretty much on the numbers.
People, by the way, who are listening worldwide who have every intention, and that's one of their longtime goals in life, is to make it to the Magic Castle, have never visited. So if you want to give some more detail about that and how the shows work and the intermittence of them and everything, why don't you can describe that a little bit more?
Well, the three major showrooms, there's the close-up gallery, there's the parlor of prestidigitation, and then there's the palace of mystery, the big room. The close-up gallery has about 27 seats in it. Parlor has, I think, 50, 55, maybe standing room only, maybe 60 people in there. And then, of course, the big room, the palace of mystery, has 125. And so, but they go off on the numbers. It's 8 o'clock start, boom, they're because the whole thing is running pretty tight. Mm-hmm. You get a guy like me in there who can't do a half an hour. I just got to be another. Can we get another 10 minutes, maybe 40 minutes or something? Anyway, so they've allowed me and everybody else down there basically to just kind of run long, let it go. If we're having fun, we don't have to curtail it because it's 8 o'clock. We got to stop and reset for the next show. It's more freewheeling.
Yeah.
And a lot more fun as far as I'm concerned, because
and it's a real bar. I mean, they're serving drinks down there also, just like you did at the Tower, right?
Right, you are, and that's one of the ways that I got Milt's attention was that we could make a lot of money out of this joint, and So John Armstrong and myself, I think, are vying, you know, neck and neck in terms of the highest numbers turned into that particular, you know. But I'd stock it full of Hollywood-type pals of mine, and it was just, it's a grand, grand fun thing. It's also, you don't do 7 days, you do 5 days, Wednesday through Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so Monday and Tuesday, it's generally dark.
Well, they have the Hat and Hair Pub, which is a lot smaller over there. Another great bar. I know that Mike Pichotta has worked there for years.
Yes.
But kind of as a resident bartender there. But there are only so many people can get packed in that room, unlike there at the library bar, where that not only do they have seating, but you can kind of be standing outside the area for people to watch.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. The Hat and Hair Pub, Mike does an unbelievable job there. He's got it down. It's sort of like he kind of grew into the room, sort of like I grew into the tower. It was just sort of like, okay, we're going to make a little course correction here, a course correction here. And now, you know, he gets that first row all served and crushes them with his magic. Mike is unbelievable. He's definitely one of the other bar magicians that would be worthy of note. But, you know, it's interesting. I guess at 73 years old, I'm becoming part of the old guard, and I'm realizing, you know, these new young whippersnappers they're coming up with the trick a minute, their trick per DVD, and you know all that other stuff. I guess that's where magic's going. I can't buck the trend, and you know I'm too old to fight anymore. You know.
Well, you joined it whenever that you put out your DVD about the Card Under Glass, which was really good.
Yeah. Well, I've just been in touch with somebody who I'm starting to give lessons to using that DVD set as a basis of where to start.
Yeah.
There's performance, and then there's theory, and then there's technique, the toolbox, and it ain't dead yet. So I mean, I used to work the castle two or three times a year. For a week, because and sometimes 2 weeks, because I sold whiskey down there, and you know it had a thing. And the numbers guy on the third floor said, "Hey, this guy is pretty good. Keep him around." And so just my home, and I'm missing it terribly, and plus all my friends out there.
That's what I remember about also at the Tower, about how that you would keep a great audience, but then you would stop and say, what was it you were drinking over there, Slick, you know, and Steven, that you got something, and I think, and what was that guy's name that worked behind the bar with you, Bolt or Flash or Speedy, or what was that guy's?
Zoom.
That's kind of interesting. His name was Zoom.
Yeah. Well, over the 27 years that I was at the Tower, we had a lot of different guys kind of revolve in and out of that backup position. Yeah. Some of them take to it like a duck to water. Mm-hmm. Others, they'd want to hang back because they served a purpose. But when you had the lively guy attending bar along with it, and we'd be trading lines back and forth, I've had this discussion. Let me think, where do I start this thing? I'm writing a book about my experiences at the Tower. Mm-hmm. It's not a trick book. I do discuss certain tricks, but not specifically. This is more of a souvenir book for my patrons than magicians, but I think magicians would get something out of it. But the whole idea of working every single night, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. that 5 nights a week, you know, it's a grind, first of all. Some great stuff comes out of it, but it's hard work. I used to do it 5 nights a week, and then when Eric Mead joined the team, we did it. Each of us did 4 nights. In other words, one of the nights we'd be there together.
But I just remember that what you were saying is GTFM was one of your slogans back then, of trying to get the money and also to sell drinks, because that's why you're at the bar, is to make the money by them buying drinks. So it's not just about watching the magic. But so that's why I thought it was interesting that you could stop mid trick and say, wait a minute, I want to make sure this guy's got his beers low. He needs another one over here, so bring him another one. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason we're there.
Exactly.
I mean,
Same thing like with trade shows. We're there to try to sell the company's business. We're not there to entertain. You know, if we're paid to entertain, to come in after dinner or something, you know, that's one thing, or a cocktail party. But when you're at a professional establishment or you're working in a trade show, you are there trying to sell the company and trying to make money for the company. And I think that you found that secret way back then.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't, it was a discovery that I made, but I certainly didn't originate it.
Yeah.
Al Andrucci from Chicago, and in the glory days of Magic Bar.
Heba Haba Al.
Did you ever get to
work? I did. Saw him lecture once, even.
Oh, I would love to have seen that. Yeah. Love to have seen
it. It may be on video. Charlie McFarlane may have a copy of that.
Ooh. Well, that would be interesting. McFarlane was actually here in Basalt at one point. He called me up, out of the clear blue. I thought it was a crank call, you know. I'm here in Basalt. It was like, well, you got to give me more notice than that.
Well, see, Charlie McFarlane and Dave Fields many years ago in Midland, Texas, hosted a convention called Close Up for Connoisseurs. And
right.
Heba Haba Al was one that they brought in, along with Martin Nash, and they had Daryl and Michael Amar, Phil Wilmarth, Roger Klaus, Eugene Berger. It was an amazing convention. And I believe that he recorded some of the things, and so he may have a copy of Heba performing and lecturing.
What a treat. Magic Bar is difficult to define because there's so many different factors that go into it. You know, if you work outside the bar in the barroom area, but not behind the bar, are you behind the bar working? Are you selling whiskey or you're not selling whiskey? Very few bars that I've run into are designed for a guy like me or any other magic bartender for that matter. You know, the perfect place to work the entire room is right here in front of the sinks. The guy's got to do the dishes here, you know, so you can't, you know, so it's tough. It's just not an automatic plug in. This is a great idea. Let's do this.
Right.
It's difficult to define it. So, you're going to have to get in there and kind of rework it to what's going to make it work for you. So luckily the tower was ideal.
Did John Denver actually find you? Well, actually, I guess that was already going, and Bob Sheets was there. Is that right? Way back whenever you first came in?
Right. Sheets was there. Sheets turned it into a magic bar in 1975 when the boys, the management team there, talked John into signing his name on the lease and making it, the tower bar, the tower, you know, fondue. It used to be the tower fondue. When the boys bought it, when John bought it for the boys, it just became the tower. And it was American food, you know, wonderful steaks, crab legs, sauces, you know, chicken with sauce and a couple other, you know, various. But it was really just a pretty fine dining, I would say, you know. Maybe not fine dining, just damn good food, basically. So John didn't. John had nothing to do with me. I was friends with these three guys, the three guys that started the tower. I knew them from Palo Alto and Cupertino. They were fraternity brothers at San Jose State, and I knew them, you know, kind of peripherally. But my buddy that I came out here with, Jeffrey Jacobson, Jake, to all his friends. We're good pals with these guys, and so we decided let's take a motorcycle ride and go out there. I was going to turn 30 years old on the 22nd of July. So on 7/7/77, that's July 7th, 1977, Jake and I got on our motorcycles and cruised across the desert to Snowmass, Colorado, and walked into the bar that night, going to have a big celebratory welcome dinner with all the boys. Now, I didn't know any magic at all. I'd stop and watch a guy do the linking rings or something, throw him a buck, but I knew nothing about magic. In fact, I'm just kind of fine-tuning this, the experience of seeing behind, sitting at the bar and watching this lunatic behind the bar go, he'd say, for example, it seemed like he asked me, what would you like to drink? And I said, I'll have a Heineken. He went, oh, wait a minute, Heineken, huh? Oh, wait a second, hold on a second. He took a pad of paper and he wrote Heineken on it, ripped it off, stuck it on the beer bottle and gave it to me. He said, you want a clean glass or a dirty glass? Now, I'd never, what? I mean, I'd never seen anything at all like this.
Yeah.
And then know. And then if you've ever seen Bob when he's, you know, unplugged, he's all over the map. Water? You want water? The bar. Hold on a minute. And he walked down. He get a glass and he pushed the ice in it just like a snow cone, just as much as he could get in there.
Yeah.
Drip water in it and then put a straw in it and a whipped cream and a cherry on top and then deliver it to the person. Now, these people don't know what's going on. And the rest of the bar, of course, are familiar with Bob and they know he's crazy. They're on their floor laughing. I sat at that bar for 20 minutes before we went back for our big dinner thing. And he didn't do any magic during that 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 18 minutes, because eventually he did a couple things. But the first part of it was just the preparation of the drinks and walking up and down selling GTFM, get the money.
Exactly.
So now this appealed to the salesman in me, because I was prior to this adventure, I was working in a health food store in San Jose, Cupertino, California, actually. And there was a lunch counter there, a bar. Now, obviously, the product line is way different. You know, we were serving nature burgers and smoothies and what have you. But the pace is the same. It's you know, I recognize the customer. I see you. I'm going to get to you right away. Keeping track of the orders in my mind and all the rest of that stuff. So I didn't realize it, but that I was in training. One of the things that really kind of helped me get into this whole situation. When I was working at the health food store, you know, I'd take home a trade magazine or something, and I'd look through and I'd read about ginseng or ginkgo biloba or whatever the supplement that I was reading about was. So the next day I'd go into work, and I'd set up by the register. I'd set up a little pyramid with all these bottles of whatever vitamin I was hawking that day. And so once the bar filled up with lunch patrons and they're all munching away on their nature burgers, I'd go into the ginseng show or, you know, whatever. So I'd start talking to the person here right here at first base. But everyone down the bar is, you know, like eating their sandwich, staring at me going, yeah. And it, you know, it helps for psoriasis and whatever, you know. And so when I saw Bob work, it was like, Jesus, you know, I've already been in training for this. I sort of know how to do this. Now, I had to learn how to make a whiskey sour and a gin and tonic and, you know, the different kinds of, you know, I had to learn the bar. But in terms of the pace, phew, I was just I'm ready for it. Just jump, send me in, coach. I know the place. And so when the week-long vacation turned into 2 weeks and turned into 3 weeks, and suddenly it was like, I'm not leaving to go back to California. This is heaven, you know. Forget heaven. Forget West Virginia. This was heaven, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it was.
But you didn't know any magic still at that time.
I didn't know any magic, and so I got, you know, I got a job as a waiter. But every, you know, in the restaurant for the off season, it was pretty slow. So every chance I had, I'd go back to the bar door and watch what Bob was doing, and through some set of circumstances, he left and I stayed there at the bar. He went into Aspen to open up a place called the Jolly Jester, which was another legendary, you know, because he'd take all of that shtick that he had and he'd down there, and he hooked up with Steve Spill,
mm-hmm.
J.C. Wagner, and he had these guys come out and help him open up this new magic bar, this new magic place. Well, I mean, I didn't know J.C. I didn't know Spill.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything. But this turned out, they turned out to be the faculty of my magic college. You know, we'd hang out during the day, you know, doing what we do here in Colorado, Rocky Mountain High and all that stuff, and practice these cards. And then I'd get to go into the bar and try them in the bar right in front of real people. And, boy, there's nothing... There's no other way of doing this than to get this experience. You just got to do it every single night. So I did it essentially every night for 40 years.
So you were the only bartender, obviously, whenever that they all went over to the Jolly Jester at that point, because that was their full-time thing, and that left a wide opening for you.
Right. And Bob taught me a real basic card trick and a copper, silver, brass, which is still in my repertoire.
Yeah, exactly.
Every single day, I, you know, when I, at least when I, I do that. And so it's, well, it's pretty exciting.
But the Jolly Jester didn't stay open as long. In other words, that was just there for a few years, and those guys split up, or that closed, didn't it, after a few, I mean, maybe 5 years or so?
It was even five. It might have been more like 4 years. Basically, as wonderful a magician as Bob was, he was not a very good money guy. And so, you know, basically, you know, the pouring cost is supposedly somewhere around 19%. At there, it was like 40%, you know. It's doomed. It's only so much time until this thing is going to hit the ditch, which it happened. It wasn't because it wasn't popular. It was roaring. But, you know, I can remember standing there and, you know, closing time, and the guy from the kitchen comes back, grabs a case of beer, and goes out the back door. I go, where are you going with that? He said, well, Bob said it was okay. Well, you don't make any money with, you know, people walking out with right. cases of, and so it was ill-fated from the start, and it was I was never so happy that I made the decision I did, because I was like, well, should I go to the Jolly Jester and follow the boys on there, or should I stay with John Denver and Michael Shore and all of the other people that were running the Tower Restaurant? And so, you know, obviously after 3 years they closed the doors. The Tower is charging ahead.
Right.
And I made the right decision.
I remember years ago that you and Eric had told many people about anyone who's going to be coming out and working here, or regardless, they're working the Tower and helping you or wherever they're working, that they should be saving their money for the rainy day. Because during the summertime, you don't have the same kind of tourist base you do during the winter. And basically, it's the old parable of the grasshopper, you know, and the,
sure.
just saving money because you're going to need it.
Yeah. Especially in a resort area, things are more expensive here. Mm-hmm. You get used to that cash flow, you know, and then suddenly, and then the off season rolls around. You know, you got we closed on approximately the 15th of April, and we reopened the 15th or so of June. That's 2 months, you know, and the same thing happens in the fall. It's another 2 months in the fall. So you're only working 8 months out of a 12-month year.
Which was why that I thought it was brilliant when you came up with the idea with the Children's Festival to bring in more people during that time.
Yeah, well,
in the off season.
Well, that was summer. Summertime is okay. But a lot of Winnebago pilots, and you know, they eat in the car, and then they, you know, they come out and find out what's going on. You know, so it's not the same as the wintertime when you have private jets lining the airport, and you know, you haven't got room for any more jets there. Yeah, you know, but the off season, and I realized that I needed to start traveling too, you know, because I get more and more people going, hey, we're having a big party in Texas. You know, early 80s, oil was king.
Of course. You know, that's why I think I got to know you when you came down to Texas so frequently. I ran into you a lot down here.
Yeah, well, it was great at that point because they had tons of money, you know, afraid to use it, you know. And so, the private parties and eventually some trade shows and, you know, so something to kind of fill in those 4 months. And then it bled over into, you know, I had, you know, I would leave every now and then, but I had, you know, I had a backup guy. I had Eric, you know, to stand in for
Eric's
me.
Eric's not a bad backup guy. Eric
Mead. he can carry his weight all right, for sure. And it was funny when he came up here, it became evident, you know, in the early 90s when I had two kids, you know, two boys at home, that I can't do this, you know, at nighttime as much as, you know, totally devoted to it. So, all right, find somebody else. Well, where are you going to find somebody else that wants to pick up sticks and move here? You know, if he hasn't got anything going wherever it is, whether it's Houston or San Antonio or St. Louis or Seattle, wherever, if he hasn't got anything going on with those things, well, maybe that's indicating he's not that good. And so I'd met Eric Mead at a number of different magic conventions, and he was always kind of the Jack Kerouac character. And he was traveling around working in comedy clubs and stuff. So I approached him on it, and he said, oh, I can't do it. I've got a show in February. I have to, you know, like, well, it's fucking December, for crying out loud. Come on. So Eric was I had to cajole him and beg him and offer him this, that, and the other thing. And he finally relented and said, all right, I'm going to be there for one season. I'm going to start in November. At the end of April, I am out of here. And I went, okay, that's great. No problem. And that was about 30 years ago. And he's still.
Yeah.
You realize that the sublime nature of being able to walk into a place, your audience is there waiting for you, and you can try all kinds of things. I mean, this is the I didn't use it as a laboratory as much as Eric did, because once I got something that worked, I just went ahead and did it. But you know, the bar is a great place to it's a laboratory.
Well, talking about laboratory, that reminds me of a seminal article that Eric had written for Genie Magazine that really, if it didn't change my life, it certainly gave me pause to think that I still think about. And that was when he talked about having broken his thumb in some accident, skiing or however it was. But the thing was that he couldn't do card moves. So he kind of switched to mentalism. And so he was doing some mind reading things, and it caused him to slow down more and to think about interacting with the audience rather than working on the slight. So it was the presentation that became more important, as I recall. Does that kind of sound about right? Did I capsulize or summarize that right?
Right. That's exactly right.
So as a result, that for a short time that he was, I guess, kind of doing some mentalism at the bar for a while then, until he healed up.
Resourceful as it was, you know, it was an endo off his bicycle. You know, he just went over the handlebars and landed on his hand. You know, Eric is pretty well connected in the magic world, you know, so he spent time hanging out with either on the phone or in person with Max and a few other people and put together a really, you know, a solid show. Eric is, you know, in my mind, one of the best magicians walking the planet these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got everything. You know, I used to say that about Tim Conover. He got work in everything. He got the alphabet down to 23 letters. You know, that's the kind of in-depth study that he goes. But you know, I don't think there's another magician out there that can hold a candle to Eric.
Yeah, I'm anxious to get Eric's book out on Tim Conover. I know he's been working on that for a long time. And because of his attention to detail, that's going to be a classic when it comes out.
It's unbelievable. I mean, if anybody's ever seen Timmy work, well, you know, that's Tim was one of the best magicians on the planet. You know, he and Williamson and Eric Mead are, you know, right in the deal. I'm proud to know all of those guys.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the bar, and you have had to have had a lot of stories, which are going to be in the book, I'm sure, of things that have happened that have been pretty crazy for a night where maybe somebody's been drunk and you've had to throw them out, or maybe not. You got a couple things on in your mind, or something's coming up in the book you can think of?
Well, that was there's 43 years of stories. Pick one. So it's après ski time, okay? Lifts shut down at 4. Dinner doesn't start till 6. People start drinking and replaying their days and how much fun they had. And I'm working there, and there's a group of people, friends of one of the managers of the place from Cape Cod. You know, there's obviously wintertime in Cape Cod, so there's nobody doing anything there. So I'm entertaining this little group down there, and there's a dark-skinned girl there. She's just beautiful. Lola is her name, and she had a great sense of humor and a wonderful laugh. It was infectious, and everything was going along great. And at the far end of the bar, there was a couple of big guys, you know, hunkered down there, and they were making overt racial comments. It did not
appropriate.
Didn't fit. We're here to having a good time. What is this?
Wow.
You know, so, you know, I'd go down there, I'd serve a drink, and I'd walk away, and I'd hear some derisive laughter, or, you know, it was just like, what's going on with this? You know, so finally he got up and left, and Lola and the gang went in the back, and I'm completely weirded out now. It's, you know, 6:30, the rush is starting, and I'm just off center because of this weird thing. You don't expect to run into that in the ski resort where everybody's just having fun.
Sure.
You know? So in the meantime, a friend of mine comes in He's a doctor. And I explained to him the situation and what had just happened. And he said, we're in the middle of this conversation when the door opened and here comes this guy again, the ringleader of that whole thing. Now, he didn't have his posse behind him, all right? But he was clearly
reloaded drunk. For bear.
Yeah, he was drunk, and so he wanders up. I leave Dr. Keith by himself. I walk over behind the bar, and I hear the guy say, "Hi, my name is Al, and I want to be your friend." And with that conversation previously, Dr. Keith looked at his hand, looked up at him, looked at his hand, said, "No, I got enough friends. Thanks." So I'm just like going, whoa, wait a minute, what's going to happen here? So he turns, there's nobody in there that's thinking like he is. So he spins around, goes out the door. Well, by now it's 9 o'clock. And I'm just, this is not going to work tonight, okay? This my whole day is in the ditch. I can't do it. So I get out of the office and I'm getting my stuff together to leave. And the barmaid at the time calls me on the second line in the office, said, "Doc, don't go. He's back and he's got a gun."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Chris, terrific. Now, the bar is clear except for this one guy at the end and then Al, and sitting at the far end of the bar. And I come up and I'm trying to give some moral support to Carol, who's flipping out at this point.
The bartender. Barmaid.
Barmaid. So when I heard he's got a gun, I hung up and I immediately called the police, which are, right around the corner. However, it took him a long time to get there. So Al and this other guy are having a little conversation on there. And just, if the cop comes in and I hear this thunk hit the ground, and I thought, I don't know what that is exactly. But I said, that's the guy over there. That's the guy. So Randy, the cop, walks around the corner and looks down and starts to pick up. It just picks up this cannon. It was a .357 Magnum.
Oh, my gosh.
This is, just the side of the building off, And so the cop has the gun in his hand, and old Al at least had the presence of mind and said, "No, I don't know where it came from." Well, there's two guys. One of them is you, and the other guy that had, So anyway, he was escorted out of there. I see him on Facebook. I recognize his face, but we don't converse. We don't send Christmas cards or anything to each other.
Was he hauled off to jail, I assume, or
he was
the drunk
they
tank?
Talking to, and they confiscated his gun.
Yeah.
So I think he realized that this is probably not the best place to.
Yeah. Why would you travel with a gun to go to a vacation resort with that kind of a gun? That just is amazing.
Well, it is. I mean, a pop gun, perhaps, something that fits into your belt or something. But, have you ever seen a .357 Magnum?
It's pretty darn big.
Like it's a cannon, for crying out loud. Yeah, and then there's all kinds of other stories, but probably if you don't mind, indulge me one a little bit further. The thing that kind of was a paradigm shift for me was I finished the show. It was the room was full. It was like crazy, yada, yada, yada. And we'd fallen behind on the business end of the bar. So I went down there and I was helping the other bartender pour drinks. And, we're trying to get caught up and, get the money.
Sure.
And as I'm looking at the orders and I'm looking at the thing and I'm setting up the glasses and stuff, a lady comes up, right there at the service end of the bar. And she said, "Thank you. I just want to thank you." And I said, "Well, no problem. I'm glad you had a good time. Come back and see us again." And sure. I've got one eye on her and one eye on making drinks.
Sure.
And so she stood there for a little bit longer than I felt was normal. And at one point she reached over and grabbed my hands, both of them. Now, this is hard to pour whiskey when somebody's holding on to you.
A little bit.
She said, "No, you don't understand. I have terminal cancer. I didn't want to come on this vacation. My friends dragged me along. I sure didn't want to come to a bar. This just was not on my agenda. But I just want to let you know I had more fun than I laughed more than I have in months. And right now I don't hurt. Thank you." I had to back room. I was just like, damn.
They get your attention.
What Up until that point, I was just a guy doing a couple of clever, how does Teller put it, a clever guy that learned to do a few cool things. That's it, you know, and making money, and we're all having fun. But I realized that there's something deeper going on when people get together and laugh together and have a good time together. It's, endorphins are released. It's a big deal. So I launched into research on the therapy of laughter, the beneficial aspects of positive humor in our lives, using magic as a basis to start with, and then go on to, Norman Cousins, The Anatomy of an Illness, and a lot of these other, mind over matter and that kind of stuff. And that became, that set me off on the path of trying to figure out, what am I doing there? Okay, I'm entertaining a bunch of rich tourists. Okay, that's good. But there's other work being done. And then when I would leave and go on the road and stuff, there's other stuff going on out there than just the pure entertainment. It's something therapeutic. So there's been another couple of stories in the book that relate to that and how important it was. If I can, I don't want to give you some of the good stuff from the book, but let me tell you this little story here. Magic lectures. You know what they are. Mm-hmm. The dog and pony show. It's a Tupperware party, right? Mm-hmm. You do the dog and pony show, and at the back, thing up. All right. I've been all over, pretty much around the world doing magic lectures, which has been fabulous. 2009, I was invited to go down to Phoenix. I was booked at the castle. I was leaving here. I was going to go to Phoenix, then to Palm Springs, and then on into L.A. to do, I stand at the castle. And so I was going to do a lecture in Phoenix and Palm Springs. When I was in Phoenix, I got a phone call from some friends down in Tucson. And they said, Doc, we want to we understand you're in Phoenix. We'd love to have you come down here. We're a great group. We buy like crazy, which is all I needed to hear. Okay, so no problem. I'll be there tomorrow evening, and we'll do it then. And so, I drove the 2 hours from Phoenix down to Tucson, and walked in. I got it all set up here, and everything's all set to go. The doors were open, and five people walk in. Five. I'm going, this is the lecture, this all the guys? I said, yeah, you're the fifth guy in 2 months that we've had giving lectures down here. Went, oh, God. So I'm not real happy with how this is all going here.
Sure.
So one guy buys something. He bought me the copper, silver, brass routine and the coins. $75.
Right.
I drove out of Tucson the next day.
That was it? Just the one thing?
That's one thing.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say that broke the ice and everybody else started buying, but that was just it. Wow. Okay.
Nobody else had any money.
Wow.
They were there for a time, but no, that was it. So I'm driving out of there, spitting out the window, thinking, why did I ever come to Tucson? This was a complete waste of time. I bummed out. So I went on to Palm Springs and went on, and I forgot about it. So fast forward to January 2011. Now, the things that are going on at this point, the shootings these days are like a dime a dozen. Every day has some other idiot with a gun.
Unfortunately.
But back then, in 2011, when the congressman, Gabby Gifford, was having a little rally there, Gabby Gifford was injured. A little 9-year-old girl was killed. And there's a bunch of other people that were affected. So the phone rings. I'm getting ready to go to work. Up in Snowmass, and I see 520 area code. That's Tucson. Maybe it's an order. Let's check it out. Pick up the phone. Hi, it's Doc Eason. Can I help you? He said, Doc, it's Jim Tucker. Jim Tucker. I know that name. He's the one guy that bought something in Tucson.
Okay.
He's my will, for Christ's
sake. Yeah, he's your friend.
So now I'll dispense with the raspy voice, and I'll explain it in a moment. But he was talking like this. I can almost understand him. But okay. I said, Jim Tucker, as I live and breathe, how are you doing? What can I do for you? He said, well, we had this shooting down here. And I went, well, yeah, this was 2 days after it happened. It made all the papers, Jim.
Yeah, well, yeah, we have television up here. We've seen the news. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, I took two bullets.
What?
And I went, what? Yeah, I took two bullets. One went through my calf. The other lodged under my collarbone. They're afraid to take it out because they're afraid that I might be paralyzed.
Holy moly.
I said, really? Where's the congresswoman, Gabby? He said, oh, right next door. I said, are you in the hospital now? You're calling me from the hospital? Yeah.
Holy cow.
Jim, I'm glad to know you're okay. Why are you calling me? He said, well, you remember when you were in Tucson? I went, oh, yeah, I remember. I bought this trick that requires some manual dexterity. Yeah? He said, well, the doctors want me to do some repetitive motion with my hand. And the only thing I can do is that trick. And every time I do it, I think about you. Fuck. It blew my mind. I was stunned, obviously, but I realized why I had to go to Tucson 2 years before that. I had to get this thing in this guy's hand. So eventually, now I don't know whether you believe in all that stuff and the coincidental nature of it all. It was just too much for me. It was just too much for me, you know. But that to me is like. A moment. I can't even tell the story without choking up about it. He's fine. He's doing great. I talk to him probably two or three times a year. He calls me just out of the clear blue. You know, I'm thinking about you and we're doing this, that, and the other thing. I'm thinking, it's a coin trick. You know, it's the first one I ever learned. Okay. Mm-hmm. I gave it, I let this guy have it, and now he's, you know, he's back operational and his hands work and everything's fine. So anyway, it's things like that that and after this many years of doing this, you know, because I'm looking for some kind of meaning in my life at this point, you know, in terms of why, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people out there thinking, you know, childish ways, you know, give up the childish ways, you know, card tricks or, you know, well, not, I think there's some actual therapeutic value in that, you know, and what we do. So anyway, waxing a little too philosophical here at this point, but you get the picture.
Well, yeah, and as you were telling me yesterday about how when you had laid out all of these different pictures and your diary and whatnot of where have you been on a timeline on your table and going for like 8 feet long, and you're thinking, wow, how could I have done this? I was on this cruise ship, then I went to Boston, I was at the Tower, I was down in Houston, and et cetera, et cetera, and on the cruise ships. It's just that you have just, a lot of experience. And wondering how that you could encompass all this in one life. And if you stop and think about all the people who didn't call you, whose lives have been touched in certain ways, about how that whatever you said or did had positively influenced their lives. That one person that Jim had called you was just representative of others who haven't, is another way of looking at this.
Yeah. Well, and once, yes, that's absolutely true. And I'm, you know, being where I, the fact that I was in this place for as long as I was, people would come back year after year after year after year. So I was lucky enough to get some of these stories for people to tell me how much they affected it. You know, there's a kid that's a kid anymore because he's a grown man, but he got him behind. I used to bring kids behind the bar. Oh, my son does magic. Good. Come on back here. Get him up on the platform. Stand up on one of the ice buckets. And so he's tall enough to do it. And it's 5 minutes that I don't have to do. And this
exactly
is thrilled because he's behind the bar at the Tower in Snowmass. I mean, he's working his magic there. Well, this kid went on to become work at Disney. He got going to school in Florida. Got a medical degree, and would do occasional things like that. He's a magician, but he's also a doctor. And it's because of his experience there at the Tower, you know. There's a really good friend of mine, R.J. Owens. He was living in San Francisco at the time. When I met him, he's about 30 years old, and I met him. Let me think. How do I launch into the story? All right, back a magic lecture again. Okay, I'm coming up from L.A. I finished the castle, came up to San Francisco. I'm going to do a lecture in San Francisco. Joe Pahn, misdirection.
Oh, sure. He has a magic shop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the guy, the organizer. You know, at any time, a guy like me on the lecture circuit, you know, you head to the guy that's got all the information and you figure out where you're staying, what you're doing, what you know, right, detail. Right. So I pull in there and introduce myself to Joe. And I say, okay, Joe, I want to see if I can cop a little nap before I get on there. Where am I staying? Because as you may well know, you know, it's wherever 49.95 buys, right?
Right.
Or the room. I mean, it's a Red Roof Inn, you know,
in a
squirrely area of town. So, here I am, San Francisco. Where am I staying? He says, oh, you're staying at the Sir Francis Drake. And I went, Sir Francis Drake? That's that boutique-y little hotel down by Union Square. And yes, yeah. That's the hotel I'm staying at? I said, yeah. Go down there. Where am I lecturing? Right there in the basement, in one of the meeting rooms downstairs.
At the hotel. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. So he said, drive your car down there, leave it at valet parking, and go up to the lobby. You got to take an escalator up into this opulent lobby with full of marble and gold leaf, and just unbelievable. All right. He said, be on the lookout. Your biggest fan is there. I didn't know what that meant. I walked up as I cleared the room. I'm basking in this luxurious hotel lobby. I look down. There's a desk at the far end. I see this huge guy stand up and put his hand flat on the desk, bolt over the desk and make a beeline for me. Now, this guy is 6'7", weighs about 375 pounds. All right. Now, I'm 6'2". I don't look up to a lot of people. When I do, I'm aware that I'm looking up at them. Okay.
Sure.
I turn at this monster, you know,
bearing towering. Down, yeah.
Gives me a big bear hug. I'm glad you're here. Signs me in, takes me up to the top floor. Now, it's only 8 floors in this thing, but the local bon vivant, I don't know what it, you know, Harry Denton, he owns the whole top floor. Okay, fine. I got one of the little bedrooms. Now, I walked in there, and I've never been in a brothel, but this looks like it would be a high
– what you would imagine it would look like, yeah.
Palm things and red velvet and green velvet and all this other stuff.
Just
like, I haven't been in a room like this ever, okay? So I go downstairs. I get a little nap. I go downstairs. I walk into the meeting room, and the meeting room is set for 100 people. Now, you know magic lectures, if you get 35, that's a pretty good size.
Yeah, okay? Outside of a convention, you're not going to get that kind of a group, right?
100 seats, and they had to bring more in because more people showed up. I'm just going, what the hell is this all about?
Wow.
So, and many well-posted magicians from the Bay Area came out to see me. I was humbled at the crowd. We finished the lecture. They bought everything I had. I could have sold them my underwear out of my thing. I mean, they were just buying everything, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there with the pockets bulging full of money and credit card slips, and this is unbelievable. So he says, are you hungry? And I went, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. Now I'm thinking Denny's all night, greasy egg,
yeah.
Right? Oh, no.
Get the grand slam.
We're down to get down to basement level Scala's, 5-star restaurant. The place is deserted. The concierge, who was RJ, told the kitchen that he has a VIP in town, keep the place open. We're going to have dinner later. Okay. So we sit down at a dinner, and if this is a full tilt, appetizers, entrees, desserts, you know, this is unbelievable. The food was fabulous. So we go into the bar. Now, in a bar in San Francisco, in the bar, you can't smoke inside and you can't drink outside. So we spent a lot of time in the doorway with a drink in one hand and a cigar in the other hand that he produced. Okay. So I'm just, my head is reeling. I'm just, you know, this is unbelievable. So he takes a big in his cigar and gets real close to the doc. When I was 14 years old, my mom and dad took me to Aspen, Colorado. And I sat at your bar. And this, my friend, is payback. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? All right. So, I mean, when I it was like Willy Wonka on the elevator, falling away into the stratosphere. It was like, what? This is unbelievable. Because I was nice to a 14-year-old kid who, you know, at 6'6" and 300 pounds, you know, he was a pretty gawky kid probably at age 14. But he discovered magic watching me work and went off and became, well, now, well, not. The Cirque du Soleil came through San Francisco and they picked him out of the thing. And he was the baby in Mystere. Oh. You know, and Mystere is like one of the longest running Cirque shows ever. Mm-hmm. He's established. He's making tons of money. It's incidents like that that keep me going, you know?
Sure.
I mean, it's just,
Well, magic is a performing art, and when you stop and think about how people react to art, we all react differently. When we go to a museum, we go for different reasons. Some people may be drug along with someone who wants to go there. Some people want to go there for inspiration. Some people are killing time. Some people like a particular artist, and they've got a gallery that's going to be showing this person's artwork or whatever it is. And even after you get there, you may or may not necessarily be inspired to like that. I know when you come to Houston that you like to go to the Rothko, for an example, and just sit and meditate and just look at the Rothko beautiful paintings there. And likewise, I think that with magic, again, being a performing art, that people are looking at us and experiencing it at different levels, if you will. And you may not know, again, how that a person is being affected by our art, you know? It could be that they like cards, maybe that they don't like cards, but you really don't know until sometimes, in your case, a year or many years later.
Yes, yeah, and you can't plan on it, and I don't go in every night, or didn't go in every night thinking about, you know, what's going to happen tonight that's going to, you know, feed.
Right. Well, you were talking also then about researching the importance of a therapy of laughter and all that. And then you were giving a lot of talks. I know you kind of, after the tower had closed, that you kind of started doing a series of engagements and talking to different groups as an after-dinner speaker kind of a thing. And that was, Banachek and I attended that one, I remember, for you, and you brought people on a roller coaster of laughter to tearful, emotional crying, back and forth. I mean, it was just a great talk, and I'm sure you were successful with that.
Well, yes. It was a fun thing to do, and it was a real departure from it because it wasn't about magic at that point. I used magic to illustrate points and stuff, but it wasn't a magic show.
Right.
But if I did that talk in the afternoon after lunch and then went to the hospitality suite at that night, it was a popular thing to do. I made really good money doing it. That's what's driving me nuts about what's going on now is this lack of work because we can't. It's killing me. And as far as Zoom shows, I cannot get my arms all the way around Zoom shows. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit for me.
But at 73 years old over here, it sounds like now that what you're doing is launching into going back into time and putting together this book. And so it sounds like that you're kind of moving along well. Do you have any idea when you think you might come to an end on that, or when the book might get published? I mean, you're really at the beginning stages, and usually it takes a year or two or more to kind of put something like that together. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking you're right. And I'm thinking a lot of these, I put down some rough copies of this when the tower shut down 16 years ago. Been playing with it here and there, but after the last 4 months, I'm not doing anything else. I may as well write this damn book. So, obviously, if anybody's even tried to do this, you're not writing a book, you're rewriting it, and then rewriting it again, mm-hmm. and rewriting. I have my computer open now. And I have an editor who's keeping me on track and making suggestions and rewriting this and helping me do that. So, I'm that's what my primary aim is right now. Besides that, I also fell in love. I'm at 73. I never thought it would happen for me again. But Jeannie's come into my life, and life is, I don't know how I would have done this had I not had my partner with me on this thing. I just don't know.
It's great to find love late in life then too.
Yeah. And it's an age old story. I know her from the old days, from the 40 years ago when I got here, mm-hmm. you know, she was working for John Denver, and, you know, she'd been married once and again twice and then another third time. So she married a trust funder the first time, drug dealer the second time, and a pervert the third time.
Wow.
And now she's hanging out with a magician. So
it's more than a trifecta. What would that be, I guess?
I don't know. It's dangerous. It's whatever it is. Anyway,
Well, I appreciate that. And it sounds like that things have come together, and I'm so glad to reconnect and have a chance to chat with you here this afternoon. As I close over here, one of the things I always like to close with my podcast is the name of the podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so I like to know what it is that your magic word, not necessarily a word, but what is the philosophy of life? What do you live by? I mean, when you go back and look at the expanse of your repertoire, what you have done in your life, your experiences, and what it is that has brought you to where you are today and where you want to go tomorrow, and when you wake up in the morning, what drives you? What's your philosophy of life?
I need you to tell me this yesterday when I was thinking about it. Bring me that. Jesus, I'm momentarily stumped. I don't know what gets me out of bed in the morning, other than making coffee for Jeannie and me. My philosophy of life, my God, spring this on me at the last minute like this. Can I mail it in? Well, these days, you know, these were not normal times. You know, so it's kind of hard for me to think about what my philosophy of life is when I can't work. You know, they're killing me that I'm not able to go out there and say, what's your name again and where are you from? And it's having fun with the folks.
Well, I think that's kind of what that you have been living is having fun with folks and wanting to do that again as soon as you can. And enjoying life. I don't want to put words into your mouth, but.
Well, no, I'm certainly enjoying life. There's certainly worse places in the world to carry out a pandemic than in Basalt, Colorado. I mean, you know, we're eating well. We're, you know, fine. Jeannie still has a job. I've got a little nest egg that I'm pulling off now and then. You know, every it's all good. But I'm not doing what I'm put on the earth for. That's, I think that's what it is, basically. My reason for being here is to lighten people's load and have a good, you know, have good fun, create laughter, and try and stay above the bullshit. And so I guess that's basically it, you know, to lighten other people's loads, you know. There's a lot of other people out there worse off than I am. And it's a very strange time in America. Let's put it that way.
That's it. I think you've summarized it quite well right there. That's a good way of putting a cap on that. Thanks, Doc.
You bet, Jim. God, it's great to talk to you. We don't see each other nearly enough, especially these days. Hopefully, we can sit across the table from each other and have a martini
and a cigar. Look forward to it, my friend. So, till next time. That was Doc Eason. This is Scotty out.
Scotty out.
Well, thank you, Doc. That was wonderful getting to catch up with you after so many years. I know we seem to have been going in different directions, but I'm glad we had a chance to sit down, at least virtually here, and to have a delightful conversation. And I am looking forward also to that book coming out sometime, hopefully sooner than later. I know the rest of you listeners are anxious to get that as well, and I'm sure you'll be hearing about it once it is available, probably on all the social networks. It'll probably go out. You'll hear about it. And I want to remind everybody again, if you get an opportunity, please be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Texas Magician, and also be sure to subscribe to the Pod Letter. You could be that 1,000th subscriber. So who knows? I could be announcing your name next week and welcoming you as that 1,000th subscriber. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to lighten people's load, have good fun, create laughter, and stay above the BS. This is Scotty out.